This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back. We are back. Over there in the right corner is...
It's your brother, Abdurrahim Green, and over there in the left corner, it's the doctor,
Abdul Haq Baker. And we've come back to you.
At last.
A piece of cake.
At last. Alhamdulillah. We've got a really interesting subject, bro, that you cooked up. I just love the title. So tell me the title and what you're thinking and where you want this conversation to go.
Right. Obviously, interesting. Ukraine or UK reign, imperialism, racism, and white fragility. Yeah. Basically, Abdurrahim, I'm preparing an article and then I kept starting. And I thought, No, I'm not going to write. And I'd written about 5 pages of notes, and I had the title UK Reign and another aspect there as well. And I was a bit discussing it with my wife and everything. And I found it really frustrating because we saw much emerging from the initial few days of what was happening with Ukraine.
Yeah.
And the hypocrisy in the media, the duplicity, the disingenuous statements and comments coming out that had to do with racism, that had to do with Islamophobia. It was just oozing out.
It wasn't even oozing, was it?
I think to myself, do you know what?
Yeah.
I was looking at what we as Brits were saying, and I was thinking to myself, this is so hypocritical. I was thinking like of Ian Kurdi, the young child washed up dead on the shore. The amount of people who died in the trying to cross and to flee their war-torn countries. And so I thought to myself, okay, this has got to do with whiteness, okay? And we're not just going to talk about white privilege. I think that we've got to talk about white fragility as well, because the way everyone has jumped in. Look, suddenly immigrants can come on the Channel Tunnel. They can get ferries across, luxurious travel over to the UK. We've got families offering to take in immigrants. But hold on a minute, is this a new phenomena? It is so far as whiteness is concerned, but whiteness in what instance, Abdurrahim? Because you and me know, hark back to the 90s, we had Bosnia.
Yeah.
And we saw what happened to the Bosnians. And they're white as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But they weren't afforded the same treatment.
No, definitely not.
Why not? Because of their religion.
Yeah.
Brown and black.
No, they're saying it, bro. They're saying it very clearly. Yeah. And you know what? I don't know why people are. I'm so happy that those reporters are being absolutely frank and open and saying what they're saying. It's so good that they're saying it. And bro, this is what I've been telling people, bro. I've been sitting with brothers. Yeah. You know, brothers in high places. They're not even high places, but, you know, relatively high places. Yeah. Sitting there saying you don't know what these white people are like. I know, because I come from that part of the world. I'm from that white middle class privileged background. I know what they're like. And just get, you know, and that people don't believe me, bro. It's like they look at me, I can see that look, and you know when someone's looking at you, that like that look of like, no, I don't really believe what you're saying. It's like, yeah, I hear it, but no. You know, it's like, what? And now it's just sort of, it's coming out, bro. It's like, this just not even, and I'm glad they're not pretending to hide it. I'm so glad, you know, because it's just what I've been saying for a long, long time. Like since day one, I've been saying this stuff, right?
And Abdurrahim, what's good? Yeah. And I'm jazakallah khair, because I'm speaking to someone who has white privilege, comes from the middle class. And the difference is now, is that as a Muslim, as someone before you was Muslim, being transparent, being honest, being truthful, we don't need to get on the defensive about our ethnicity, because it's beyond ethnicity that we're speaking about now. And so, again, coming back to the title, everything's in there. And before we forget, because we don't want to ignore our wonderful, patient audience who've been waiting for us to come back. Wa alaikum salam, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Oh. Esma, Ashley, all of you, Octavia, all of you whose names have been coming up on the screen. Thank you. And apologies for being off air for a while in the radio silence.
Yeah, mostly my fault.
No, but alhamdulillah, you've been busy. There's been things happening, and we're back. And I think we're
I got invited to some lectures in a real lecture hall, you know, like in a masjid, in front of real people, and like for the first time for 2 years. Well, not the first time, to be honest, but pretty much, yeah. So now everything's opening up. People are asking me. To be honest, I'm turning down a lot of stuff because it's just like, no, I'm not doing that stuff anymore. Like the whole university scene, it's like, no, dude, that's like, I'm not just traveling 400-500 miles to talk to 30 people. I'm just not doing that anymore. You know, it's like, I'm too old for that, bro. So it was that, brothers and sisters. So I apologize. You know, obviously, we, you know, a piece of cake is on Saturday. And obviously, communities generally going to want their talks on Saturday evening, isn't it? So,
That's right. You
know, it's going to, who knows? It might happen a bit more. It might not. We'll see. Inshallah. Anyway, that's why. Inshallah. So it's but mostly my fault. So I apologize, brothers and sisters. We've missed you. I've missed Abdulhak. I've missed you, our lovely audience and amazing interactions and all the great comments that you give. That, subhanAllah, sparks so many interesting conversations. Sometimes your comments are more profound than what we come up with, isn't it, Abdulhak, bro?
Yeah, no, definitely. Abu Bakr saying about Ukraine, we've deliberately spelt it, brother Abu Bakr, UK rain, Ukraine. There's a deliberate misspelling, and well, not actually a misspelling,
a play on the words,
because I think that we're looking at statements from the UK. We listen to Prince William and him making these outrageous statements, which everyone picked up on about, we expect it in other countries, Africa, the Middle East, but we don't expect it in Europe. But hold on a minute. World War I, Abdurrahim, I'm going to ask you know this. World War II, the wars in the Gulf Wars, let's go to South America, let's go to the Industrial Revolution, let's go to the what happened succeeding that, let's go to America, and let's just be really frank. Yeah. And this is what I'm talking about, white fragility, Abdurrahim. White ethnicities have been responsible for more wars on this earth in recent history and distant history than black and brown people
put
together.
More death, more destruction, more wars, more than you can imagine, right? I mean, like you said, just take the First and Second World War. Someone was saying, like, for God's sake, in Europe, they had a 100 years war, a war that went on for 100 years. It was called the 100 years war, 10 years war. That, you know, the reign of terror. I was just listening to about the reign of terror with the French Revolution. Right. And what happened there, that the people just being executed. What was it? 300,000 people imprisoned, you know, 50,000 people executed. And that's not when the population was like what it is now. That's white people doing that to white people. Right. I mean, you know, we have people still alive who fought in the Great Wars. So people, I mean, you know, it's just delusional for white people to talk about, oh, we don't expect this. But at the same time, this is human beings. We have a very, very short memory, right? We really, really do. We our memory is incredibly short and our thinking tends to be incredibly short term. And yeah, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the peculiar thing is, it's just as the United Kingdom is pulling itself out of the European Convention of Human Rights, which the United Kingdom initiated itself. Why did it do that? To make sure that what happened in Nazi Germany never happens again.
Right.
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 If you want a wake-up call, right, as to why you should not abandon things like the Charter of Human Rights, there is that right there in Ukraine. I haven't heard anyone talking about that. They're still talking about stripping away our rights, right? They're still doing it. They're still flipping, going full steam ahead, right? this Elizabeth Truss is coming out with some, I God know what stuff she, I just read today about some stuff she's going on about. Well, let's see if they stand up for this and say, oh, we're wrong. We need to actually strengthen the Human Rights Charter to make sure that people's human rights are not violated. But they don't.
You're absolutely right, Abdurrahim. But then we look at this aspect with Liz Truss advocating for foreign fighters to go over and fight. And then we see what happened with the Muslims. So there's that. And before going, Sister Lala Rook and Apex Predator, yes, Jazakallah Khair, we've missed you as well. And it's good to be back. Brother Bilal, wa alaikum salam, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So my thing is that, you know, when sometimes you have to point out the subtle hypocrisy. But as you said, in a way, this is good for everyone to see the blatant hypocrisy, the blatant racism. And as I said, Abdurrahim, what do we mean by white fragility? Okay, you're seeing that in the way societies are falling over themselves openly to help the Ukrainians. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. And I don't want to diminish what's happening to the Ukrainians, because it is bad. It is wrong. There's a problem there. But Abdurrahim, let's check one thing. Let's look at some historical aspects. When NATO started developing, the USSR at the time then decided they would have the Warsaw Pact that would counter NATO. So the neighboring nations that came under the Soviet Union were a mirror of NATO, but a smaller mirror. An agreement was formed to dismantle the Warsaw Pact, and on the premise that NATO would not spread its hegemonic strategy any further into that region. Now, if you go back and look at interviews, and I'm not defending Putin at all, but we cannot do what the propaganda wars are out there now. Russia is, they're doing their fake news. China is assisting them from what we're seeing. The West is doing it just every day. When I switch on the news, every channel, oh, poor Ukrainians, this. But let's be realistic now. NATO has continued to expand towards Russian borders and is starting to surround, or wanting to surround Russia. There's been kickback from Putin for years about that. You must stop, you must stop. Now, again, let me be clear, that does not justify what he's doing now.
No, I mean, as you put out, the West would never tolerate the same thing on their borders.
Exactly. Right?
If Russia started, you know, arming, say, Mexico, right? And we already know that they did that in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right.
America was very firm. Like when Russia was trying to send over missiles to Cuba, that was it. You know, they were saying we were, you know, hours or days away from a potential nuclear war. That's how close it came. That's, and Russia backed off, right? But I mean, Allahu Alam, bro. I think with the, you know, you know, you're right. And it's, look, no, I feel sorry for the Ukrainians. It's horrific. It's sad that any country is invaded by another country, but there's always many, many sides to the story. There's always a lot more going on. One of the things that's really disgusted me, right, really made me angry and upset, is this whole, you know, hater Russian propaganda stuff that's going on, right? You know, we're not going to call them chicken Kievs anymore. And you know, Russian shops having to stop calling themselves, you know, Russian supermarket, right? And even a tennis player saying you will not be allowed to play tennis unless you denounce Putin. I mean, this type of stuff, bro. Like, anyway, you know what? As I say, what comes around goes around. And, you know, it's just karma, bro. Like, how many of these white people have treated Muslims exactly that way, because either a bombing here or a bombing there or whatever happened, and some of it was not even Muslims anyway, like in Russia, for example. We know the apartment bombings were actually a Russian secret service.
It's well known.
It's like not even hidden that it was done by flipping Putin, right? Blew up his own people.
Exactly.
But you know what? They all turned on Muslims. They all blamed all the Muslims, right, for something. Well, now it's your turn. Right. And it'll come around to everybody bit by bit. Everyone will taste a bit of it, because that's just the law. That's Allah's law, right? That's just, and if you don't get it in this life, you'll get it even worse in the next, you know.
And the position of the Ukrainian president and Ukraine with regards to Palestine, if you remember, we don't have to go back too far. And his comments on, oh, we've got to, they've got to stop bombing and harming the Israelis, the poor Israelis. Well, this is unfair. This is unjust. And so the reign of terror that Palestinians have faced, okay, Israelis have had to face that from Hamas to a lesser degree, and it's but the response has been disproportionate as always. Stones and missiles don't equate, okay? But now they're facing a similar scenario across the board.
Someone I actually read somewhere where someone, you know, in a Twitter feed or something, you know, like the Ukrainian president was saying something about Israel and the state, like what you said, and someone had written, well, wait, just you wait till Russia invades you, then you'll know what it's like.
And it's happened.
And it's happened. You know, so like, I wish everyone will wake up and smell the coffee. When you treat people badly, it's going to come in your face, and Russia's going to get its turn. Everyone's going to get their turn, you know, and the West has been turning on itself. You know, my wife often tells me, oh, this and that and this plot and this plan and these things. I say, you know, yeah, but Allah's the best of planners.
Yeah.
You know,
and as Brother Bilal's highlighting here about using corporations as weapons of economic destruction, I was listening today that 400 American companies have withdrawn from Russia. And the discussion was about, what about the other 36 who are sort of sitting on the fence? So the American economist was appealing to the Americans, well, if they've not pulled out of Russia, boycott their goods. So you've got this us and them scenario. But let's be clear. I want to be clear from us, in case anyone mistakes us. A sister's just mentioned about her, I think her father being Russian, her mum being English. The Russians went and helped Syria. That's a bit of a debate there, if it was actually helping Syria and they're still in Syria and what was taking place there. But I'm not here advocating for Ukraine or Russia. And I know you're likewise. I'm not equating. What I'm highlighting is the hypocrisy in all of this, and no one is even attempting to hide or bury that. 2015, I wrote an article when Russia annexed the Crimea, okay? And I said, look, what did they do? They did sanctions, okay? They're doing sanctions again now.
Yeah.
Is it going to achieve anything? They're saying they're trying to avoid World War III. But ideologically, World War III started a few years ago, Abdurrahim, and it's continuing. They're talking about the physical fighting, the physical World War III, where member states are going to come together and support each other and align themselves with each other. We look at China, for example. Why are they keeping quiet? Because they're looking at Taiwan. We know what's happened in Hong Kong. So everyone has
I think there's something else playing out behind, which I think is really interesting for everyone to have a think about, you know, which most people don't talk about. And the very interesting thing to play out is the economic system behind all of it. So as I'm sure everyone knows, that the American dollar is, you know, the global currency at the moment. Yeah. Everything is pinned to the American dollar, right? Now, you see, the thing is, that gives America a lot of power. Mm. They've just been abusing that power, right? Because now, I mean, really what's the other thing that's really shocking, but everyone's waking up and smelling the coffee. It's like, well, wait a minute. Anyone who doesn't do what America wants them to do, right? Okay, that will cut you from the banking system. We'll cut you from Visa. We'll cut you from the monetary exchange. We'll cut you out of the global monetary system. I mean, obviously, we know this already happened to Afghanistan, and we know how many people are, you know, suffering and dying. And it's literally a horror story in Afghanistan. Yeah. Like, more people are going to die in the next couple of years, probably in Afghanistan, than the whole 20 years of war, right? Nothing to do with the Taliban. It's to do with U.S. sanctions. And basically, the U.S. is going to sanction anybody who does any trade with Afghanistan. There may be lots of countries who want to, right? Like Qatar or, you know, anyone, Saudi, Pakistan, anyone, however, who does trade with Afghanistan, they will be sanctioned, you know, their routes of finance will be cut off, so on and so forth. So they basically make it impossible. I mean, people don't understand this. The thing is, like, everyone is thinking, wait a minute, this is probably the first time that the USA have done this to a major world power like Russia, right? I mean, people are going to be thinking, wait a minute, if you can do this to Russia, who's next? And people are getting really a bit fed up. right?
Yes.
I mean, some analysts say, yeah, America's still going to get away with it. It's still by far the biggest, you know, economy in the world. China's not caught up with America yet. But the thing is, you know, I always say never underestimate the people to get, you know, really peed off. Yeah. And just say, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to suffer. But it's better than living under this oppression, right?
It's tyranny. Yeah.
So that's and a whole other factor that most people don't really think about, right?
This but Abraham, it's still the same imperialism, but just it in is, a different guise, a different cloak. We're seeing that with NATO on the one hand and America pushing on the other hand. Yeah. We see when we look at the UK, again, the hypocrisy that's there with the current prime minister. And we've got problems with Russian oligarchs because of the amount of investment they've made in the UK and how they've been cozying up with the Conservative government and vice versa. So all of that's taking place. And it's like, frankly, they've been caught with their pants now, to say it as frankly as I can say. And what's happening now, as you said, there's an underlying current that's actually there. Now, we know that in the impact of these sanctions, in months to come, analysts have forecast this, and just basic economics will tell us, we are all going to be impacted by what is taking place now. We're all going to be impacted economically by this. So there's an economic...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they want us to believe. But the reality is that the economy was shot to bits way before that.
I'm talking globally.
Before, right? Inflation has already run away, right? Like all of this stuff. I mean, that's a whole nother, you know, discussion as to how, you know, is something else going on here? Is this just, you know, like people... That they're quite happy to manufacture wars, conjure them up in order to distract smokes and mirrors. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm sure it really is real, right? But there's some people more than happy to do that to distract people from what is really going on, right?
Yes.
And all of these energy price hikes, it's a joke. This oil is actually cheaper than it has been for a long time. There's tons of natural gas. There's so much natural gas. There's ships sailing around the ocean full of natural gas. I remember reading an article not long ago, you know, about how much natural gas there is. There's so much of it, they don't know what to do with it. Why are our fuel prices? Oh, Russia, you know, it's the price of this and that. No, bro, it's just all... There's something else going on, bro. I'm telling you, there's some other agenda behind all of this
There is. Yeah. You and I. There's a brother that we know from Leeds, mashallah. I know very, very well. He's in the oil sector, and I remember about a year and a half ago, because he goes out to Iraq sometimes, and he was telling me that the focus of the Western companies was just on the crude oil. And he said, if you saw the flames and the amount of gases that were being wasted, why aren't they retained? Said, no, they're not interested in that, even though it's millions.
There's so much
millions.
Of it, bro.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is what these societies have done. And this is the ploy of imperialism as well, is to extract as much wealth and resources from those countries, destroying them. In order to, like a parasite, in order to live and to continue. Now, Abdurrahim, we're here, this is a Muslim show, and we're bystanders at the moment regarding this. And I think it's really important, hence the title, as I've mentioned, to realize what we're facing. And for us to say, right, how are we supposed to be as Muslims in all of this? There's so much in this title. I've thrown everything into this title, and we have to look at how we are as Muslims against all of this, with regards to Ukraine, with regards to imperialism, racism, for white fragility. And we've got to question ourselves, are we taking a position in this whole thing? And if we are, why are we? Because we know Allah speaks us to our room, where he speaks about the Romans and the Persians, and we know the ayats and the Muslims will rejoice regarding the victory of one. Why? Because it's better for the Muslims on that particular occasion. So we need to be very careful that when we're discussing this, not you and I, I'm talking generally, that we're not falling into that, and I will call it that imperialist, racist narrative. Because what we're then doing is we're accepting... inadvertently, we're accepting that we are second class by way of our deen, by way of our ethnicity, and that white fragility is what needs to be preserved in the way that we're seeing the media, the government, and the politics playing out at the moment. So we've got to be careful that we're not fueling that by debating and falling on one side or the other. We've got to see it as it is, okay? Because we're not second-class citizens, and our deen is certainly not a second-rate faith in that instance. But what we're seeing is that overdrive, that white fragility has come to the fore. And all of the nation states, even when we've had the very measured statement of representatives at the UN Security Council from the African countries, and you've seen others like the Russians, you've seen even Zelensky really navigating and saying, yes, you've got to listen to our African brethren. You've got to listen to our African brethren. Remember, Africa was despoiled, if that's a word. Africa was plundered. What happened to the colonization of Africa, and the countries have still yet to recover from that. Remember, some of them are only 50, 60 years old independence. So we need to really look at India. Look at what's happened there. Let's look at partition, Pakistan, Bangladesh. Look at all of this and look at the fingerprints, okay, of white imperialism, racism in that, on the basis of minimizing and protecting whiteness so the fragility doesn't spill out as we're seeing now. Because white fragility is at the fore. It's bubbled to the surface, and everyone's trying to push it back down, and everyone's rushing in. And so are the black and the browns sort of showing some sympathy, but a measured sympathy, because they remember what happened when it was them. And the recriminations of that are still there today. So let's not be token and, oh, yes, this is really bad and poor. Yeah, we do know it's bad and poor what's happening. But hold on, Palestine, Bosnia, religion came to the fore. African countries, Tigray, what's happening in Tigray at the moment? The Uyghurs in China, what's happening with the Rohingyas and everything in that instance when they were lording, what's their name, who suddenly was beacon of human rights. And then when she's been prosecuted by her own military, now they're sort of, oh, we're on her side, but that she kept quiet. What's her name? You sing, or what?
Kim Jo Yoon or something, or Young.
No, that's North Korea. The woman, I can't remember what her name is. Anyway, someone will remind us in Myanmar. But for me,
the leader of South Korea. Oh dear.
But no, for me, the point is, she's a hero one moment, but when the Uyghurs are suffering, we didn't hear the voices come up at that particular point. So when it comes to Muslims, what is very clear is that we are so low in the pecking order that they can speak unashamedly as they're doing now. And then when you bring in these examples, they say that you are obscuring the issue. But the issue is very clear. Imperialist, white fragility. Nothing other than that is on the cards here at the moment. And Islam, blackness, brownness is antithetical to this. And if we cannot draw a line in the sand and say, right, okay, are we going to continue to have this over-dependency, or we're going to continue to wear rose-tinted glasses and say, no, it's not really that bad. Yusu Ang, thank you. Thank you, Majak La'an. Yeah, if we're going to say that it's not that bad, worse things are going to follow from this as it relates to other Muslim minorities and other ethnicities.
Yeah.
And there will not be the cover. You will not see the cover like what we're seeing now. It will be minimized. It will be marginalized because it doesn't speak to white fragility. It doesn't threaten whiteness.
Yeah. I think, bro, one of the things, one of the people made a comment that, you know, Muslims should be neutral. And I don't think Muslims can ever be neutral, in the sense that, from one point of view, is that Muslims, we always have to stand up for justice.
Right.
Right. And that's something that Allah orders us with, to be, you know, to stand up for justice, to be firm upon justice. And even to the extent that if it's even against your own family, even if it's against your own self, right?
Right.
And you know what? One of the things, bro, looking back, I think the Muslim community has been outstanding generally, right? The Muslim community generally has, you know, has always gone out of its way to condemn things that are wrong, even about itself, right? And it's had that humility, right? Now, some people may look at it as, oh, you know, you're bending over to whatever. And I, for sure, some organizations and individuals are taking it like way too far. And even some people said, that's it. I'm not apologizing anymore. We're fed up with this. It doesn't matter how much we apologize. They still go on about, oh, when are you imams going to speak up? Well, wait a minute. There's 500 imams who signed this thing. You know, there's 50 scholars who signed this declaration. Like, haven't you read that?
Right.
People got fed up of it. But the thing is that I think as a community, we've always been ready to admit to our mistakes. And also, bro, the wrongdoings and the misdemeanors within our own community, right? By and large, not always, yeah? By and large, that's been the case. But, and I think that's when you come to white fragility, right? By and large, you don't find that, at least today, you know, white people, I think there was a time when there was a lot of soul searching. There was a time when there was a lot of questioning about the past, what they did, about imperialism. Like there was that whole period in the 60s and 70s where, yeah, I just think generally people felt really bad about what they had done. And that's the thing about, you know, Elizabeth's Trust now going on and saying, oh, Ukraine has made us understand that we shouldn't be embarrassed about our past.
What? What a crazy thing.
What are you talking about, right? You mean you did in your past what Putin is doing to Ukraine?
Yeah, it's
shouldn't
more
you
so.
Be embarrassed about that? Oh, we have to accept it, warts and all. Good. Accept the warts then. Why don't you talk about the warts? Why is it that when the National Trust, for example, yeah, I'm a member of the National Trust, right? They're a really good organization, right? They wanted, because obviously they have a lot of these old country houses, and some of them obviously were connected to slavery, right? And they wanted to start putting stuff up, right? And they're going ahead and doing it, yeah. Actually mentioning the connection of these people to slavery, yeah, so that people know that disgraceful part of the past, right? Bro, they tried to question their position as a charity, take away their charity status, this type of stuff. So what happened to accepting our past, warts and all? Like, accepting it means looking it in the eye and say, yeah, that wasn't nice, that was bad. We need to make sure we don't behave like that and do that type of stuff anymore. But it's not. It's still going on, bro, because like fundamentally a lot of white people, not all of them, there's a lot of white people who are not like this. There are a lot of white people who are very, very different. They're not like that. But there's still a really good number. And a lot of these people, quite a good number of them, other people in power, the people in corporations, the people who hold the reins of power, who still do have this racist attitude. Frankly, quite frankly, it's pure racist, you know, ethno-racist attitude. And it's coming out. Oh, they look like us.
Right. And to go...
They
to
look
go,
like us, bro.
Exactly. To look at this, how relevant that statement is. Look at what we've seen happen just recently. The news that's come out about that 15-year-old black girl who was strip searched in school. Now, Abdulrahim, I'm going to tell you. No, I read about this. She was strip searched in school because the teacher felt she smelled marijuana on her, and there was nothing like that. But they strip searched her. She was on her menses,
bro,
Abdulrahim, just has to be said.
Yeah, you got to say it. Yeah,
she was on her menses, menstruating. Yeah. And they gave her back the old used one. They won't give her a clue. And they humiliated her. Yeah, and they felt that it was okay to do that in school. In school.
15, bro. 15. So it's totally illegal as well, by the way, to say. Totally illegal, right? She's a minor, right?
Right. Would they do, if she had been a white student, would that have happened in that way? So my point is, we're looking, that's on the lower social strata when compared to
Did you see that school in Sweden? with that old white woman trying to get those Muslim girls.
Oh, that was disgusting. That was disgusting. That? Yes.
And bro, you know what was also really sad is everyone just sitting there.
No, but can you, Abdelhim, some may not know, please elaborate on that video. Yeah. It was awful. Please elaborate.
Yeah, so there's a video of an old white Swedish woman basically intimidating these hijabi girls, probably Somalian. I don't know what this was, if it was a classroom, if it was an, you know, a group of immigrants who were being integrated or whatever, right? And she's literally screaming at her, say penis. You're in Sweden, you must say penis, right? Like, I mean, she was so old, God knows when she last saw one. Old cow, yeah. And she, the girl was so terrified, right? There was one girl so terrified, she said, I want to leave. I'm really scared. I'm really frightened. She locked the door, right? And said, no, you are not leaving. Sit down.
Right.
And there's quite a lot of students there, right? And, you know, I mean, obviously we can make excuses, you know.
But the attitude, as you said, I watched the video, the attitude of that woman towards them was bullying.
Horrific, bro.
It was bullying. And...
Bro, everything, you know, like the whole thing, this whole presumption, bro. I watched this amazing, I have to send you the link. I watched this really good interview with, I think, the press, the leader of the press of the Taliban and some Irish journalist who went to interview him. And she kept on asking these, you know, like cringy questions, you know, like really cringy questions about, you know, women. And, you know, he was trying to explain that, look, men and women are equal in Islam. But we just don't look at it. Our culture is different. What we consider to be equality is not when you consider to be equality. When the men are ignoring you, right? They don't do that to be rude. That is actually out of their utmost respect for you, right? That's the way it is, right? She just couldn't get it, bro. Like she was going on and on and on. And like, obviously from someone like you and me, right? Who we've like been on both sides, right? We can sort of understand where she's coming from, but at the same time, it's like she just couldn't get it, bro. It's like you could just see, like, and it was just this whole idea that the way we white people do it is the right way. Yeah. No, what we think is freedom is freedom. What we think is respect is respect. What right. we think is, you know. And she goes on about dress. He comes out with this classic thing, right? Are you free to walk naked in your country? You can dress what you want. Are you free to walk naked? She said, no, no, that would be immodest. And she just knew that was just it. Like, what are you, you know,
right.
like, who defines modesty? Who defines it? But no, bro, this is the... But this is normal, bro. Any civilization, any dominant power, you know, they're going to have this type of, you know, not any, but most of them are going to have this type of arrogance and attitude towards others. And, you know, like you see it with the Greeks, you see it with the Romans, you know, everyone who's not right. a Greek is a barbarian. You know, the same with the Romans. I'm pretty sure probably the Egyptians were like that as well. I mean, look how they treated Bani Israel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is just, it's not a race thing, bro. It's just, that's the way, you know, power is. That's the way civilizational supremacy in worldly terms is. That's what it does.
I hear you on that. And I think what we need to yeah. acknowledge, and I when I'm speaking to my children, I'm speaking to brothers, sisters, yeah. we are living in the civilization of imperial white dominance. That's what 400-500 years ago, it wasn't that. We go a few hundred years before that even, we saw that the world on the whole, I'm not to, unless we put aside Greek, the Greek civilization, we can include Romans in that instance because we knew they were black Caesars. They, it wasn't really color yeah. that was the predominant thing at that particular time. And we know that there are great nations and histories that are there across the Americas that were brown. Across yeah. Africa, that were brown, that were black. But I think because we are living in this particular era, post-Enlightenment, imperialism, I think that the sharp and shocking reality of its existence and that all of the societies in the West and those that are coming out of colonization in the East and wherever are still upon the apparatus of white imperialism. So what we're looking at now, and it's shocking to some to see the blatant racism and preference for these white Ukrainians, but this is just reflective of the status quo that is still continuing. Yes, there may be more voices now that are speaking against it. There are more societies that are trying to press the reset button pre-colonization. But that's very difficult to do because they don't even know what pre-colonization actually looks like. And is it going to be considered backwards compared to where we are technologically today?
It's almost impossible, bro.
It is impossible. So my thing is that there's got to be an acknowledgement of that. And there's got to be an acknowledgement that the pathway that we have to traverse has to have such an ideological underpinning with regards to this Deen and Tawheed. And I've mentioned this to you before, Abdurrahim, in that the only way there will be seismic shifts taking place to eliminate, and it will have to be that, I'm not advocating violent overthrow or anything like that, but when we look at the prophetic model and we see how a superpower of that time collapsed, it was from none other than that ideological purification, attachment, Tawheed, worship of Allah. I'm not just saying we just stop and worship Allah, but this is a complete deen system that traverses any of the man-made systems that we are seeing subduing mankind in various forms: isms, communism, democracy, pluralism, whatever it may be. Yeah. That's the only way, and I highlight this is not romanticizing, but within the context of the environment and the age and time that we're living in. Why do I say that? Because you've got some extremists who will say, no, it's got to go back to exactly like that, riding horses. Yeah. No, we're talking about it has to be within that context. When that happens, then we will see this oppression reduced, not diminished, but reduced, possibly eliminated with Allah's permission. But are we a long way off? I was going to say we're a long way off. I don't know if we are. I can't answer that one way or the other. But while we're navel gazing and while we're still respecting, overly respecting, the hegemony of white imperialism, because we're impressed with technological advancement and everything like this, as though it only comes from whiteness, then we're going to stay in the position that we're in. And while we may enjoy good and forbid evil, as we must do, which is the duty that we must do that, we are going to be hamstrung, our hands tied behind our back, as we look on in admiration at whiteness, at imperialism, at the racist structures that are in place, which have filtered into our own practices. We've spoken many a time about the caste system from India that exists amongst us as Muslims, the racism that exists there, which is not from within Islam. As long as we continue to adhere to those things that I've just mentioned, then we are not going to move forward individually or collectively, because we're still looking at this imperialist system and we have a deep admiration for it, as well as a loathing. It's a love-hate relationship. We don't know what we'll do without it, so we tolerate it and try and make way in that system, but we know the system is not welcoming to us. It's a hegemonic system that wants to conquer and be superior over all. And it's predominantly white, if not completely.
I agree, bro. There's not much to add to that.
It's a sad reality.
Yep.
But we need to be speaking. You and I speak about these things, Abdurrahim, as frankly as we need to speak about them. Now, again, I want to say here, as a black British Muslim, this is not talking hate against whiteness, not at all. As you said, I'd say the majority of Britain is not like this hegemonic set of group that exists. Also, the ignorant, the uneducated, some call them the great unwashed, jokingly, but some serious. You've got some ignorant white communities that will tap into what is being fed to them by the establishment, but that does not constitute the majority.
Yeah.
And the majority is about justice, fairness, whether it's the Ukrainians, whether it's Syrians coming in, whether it's Africans coming in from various countries on the continent. They want to help. But also you do have those who say we are concerned about the amount of immigration coming into our society because we don't want the shape of the society to change. And that's a legitimate concern that they actually have. You cannot equate them all to be racist and bigots because they have that concern for their homeland changing the shape and the place it has to be. We need to really look at the nuances.
I mean, to be fair, bro, there's a lot of British people who are just as unhappy about Polish as they were about Pakistani or whatever, right? And it's funny to hear Priti Patel actually saying that, we have to watch out for extremists infiltrating with the Ukrainian, you know, immigrants, because it's a way that they could do damage to us from the inside. So we have to be careful. So I don't know if that is an attempt to be even-handed. But, you know, the funny thing is she's the one who's been like a bit sort of like, no, I'm not letting these people
exactly.
I can also understand because it's gonna come and slap them right in the face. Like, it's not long, right? Just give it a couple of years in parliament, and someone's going to be saying, wait a minute, when the Syrians wanted to come in, the Afghans, you said we have no money, we have no this, we have no that. But then when the Ukrainians came in, it was like, oh, we've got, you know, 300,000 of them are going to come in. So which is it?
Right.
It's going to come at them in the face. They know it, bro.
Yeah, you
know?
And we didn't hear House and Afghan, did we? We didn't say, and we didn't have a petition to House Afghanis or those fleeing from Tigray, and we didn't hear that at all. But
no,
suddenly,
there was definitely no campaign. Petition. I mean, you might get a few articles about people who actually do stuff like that, but you know that's in the sort of more the liberal press here and there sort of trying to show you a good story. But in terms of an actual campaign, and paying, let alone paying people £350. I noticed Sajid Javid didn't volunteer though, right? Or Boris Johnson himself. They could fit a few of those Ukrainians in number 10 Downing Street, I think.
Or if you saw the interview
or Chatham House or Buckingham Palace. There's lots of room there. The Queen doesn't even go there anymore.
Yeah.
Fill it up with
Boris Johnson was interviewed by some young students, and they asked him that question about would you house some of the Ukrainians in 10 Downing Street. You've got to watch it on YouTube. He was stumped. He didn't know what to say. And he was like, well, I'm not, I'm only a tenant here myself, and you'd have to speak. The usual obscurity, obfuscation from Boris Johnson that he's renowned for. But when it comes to others doing it, go ahead. But when it comes to putting it right in front of him, no. And as Happy has said, Boris is happy that the heat is off him. Hopefully,
I'm telling you, bro. It's just so convenient, isn't it, bro? It's so convenient that this whole COVID mess up, because it's been the biggest, you know, the biggest mess up, one of the biggest mess ups in history, right? The whole thing was a failure from beginning to end.
Right.
The whole thing about lockdown was a lie. It didn't benefit anyone. It didn't stop the spread of the disease. It did absolutely nothing. That's the evidence. Masks, nothing, right? Vaccines, definitely not what everyone thought. They're talking about dose number four now, bro. Do you remember when it was like, we're going to lock down just for 2 weeks. Yeah. Bro, they destroyed the economy. People have lost their jobs. I remember saying, bro, when this whole thing started, right at the beginning, I said, more people are going to die from suicide. Yeah. Than will ever die of the virus. More people are going to die of depression. More people are going to die of mental illness that comes from locking society down like that than they will from any virus. Right. And that's it, bro. We've got a massive crisis, bro. There's kids. I remember I was watching this program was this girl, really smart, intelligent girl, high grades, this and that, refusing to go back to work because she's just terrified of the virus, terrified of this, terrified of that.
Yeah.
Smart girl, 25 years old. She's got a high job, big pay. And like the job needs her to be interacting with people, but she just won't do it. She's refusing.
Yeah.
You know,
and the biggest, what's the big distraction? Let's have a war. How many times have we seen that? Let's have a war. When we go back to the Crusades and we talk about Pope Urban II and there was infighting in the UK and in England, and everyone basically, there was just cannibalism.
Well, that was all about what are we going to do with all these knights? Yeah, because they had a system of...
Oh, let's go to the far land and kill the vile vermin Saracens. Yeah. And then we had... So this pattern is something that is played out time and time again as a distraction from something that is impeding the status quo. So then everyone looks, and now this is a collective. You've got the Western world speaking and standing against Putin. And as you said, I remember I saw a meme, let everyone thank Putin for getting rid of the vaccine. Because all of a sudden, suddenly it's not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
suddenly it's just gone.
So what I'm saying, Abdulrahim, all of what we're discussing falls under this title. It's a very broad title, but it's also quite specific. And everything that we're looking at now falls under that. You don't hear anything of black fragility or brown fragility. You don't hear anything about racism being meted out. And let's talk about racism now. Let's look at what's happening in Ukraine. I'm one of my teachers.
Well, that's another thing we didn't even touch on.
That's what I'm going to do quickly. One of my teachers told me it's stuck over there and they were trying to get them out. And we saw video footage emerging of how Ukrainian officials were treating black and brown people, that you can't get on the trains, you can't leave. But you had them come in and pay the fees, extortionate fees, because they're foreign students. But suddenly they want to get back to their countries. This is a time when you can say, go back to your country. And they say, yeah, we want to go back. And they say, no, Ukrainians first. So even amongst Ukrainian officials...
Bro, some of them were Ukrainians.
Really? What do you mean?
Some of them were Ukrainians. There's black Ukrainians. There's people who, they're Ukrainian. Just like here in UK, you're a black citizen, bro.
Right.
You're saying, we are Ukrainian. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Meaning, bro, it's white. You're not white.
Exactly.
It's not that you're not Ukrainian, even, bro. You're not white.
You're not
it
white.
Should be. They should have just said it. White people first.
First. That's right.
It's just disgusting, bro.
So you're seeing it. While we're talking about sympathy amongst the Ukrainians, yes, but let's have a context. Let's have a context to that, because how can you be treating other races trying to flee, ethnicities trying to flee? And as you said, black Ukrainians, here's our passport. We want, my father's Ukrainian, my mother's Ukrainian. And they're denying them because of their color.
Yep.
And this is happening in Europe. This is the statement of Europe. And so we've got to really smell the coffee.
The thing is, bro, it comes out of the woodwork. It's at times of, these are the things that really show what people are made of.
Right.
When everything's happy and there's lots of money, right, and everything's, hunky-dory, it's easy to be nice, right? It's easy to be civil, right? It's easy to, bury your racism a bit and this and that. The real test, bro, and that's why Allah puts us through tests, to mark out the believers from the non-believers, from the munafiq, right?
That's right, yeah.
Because that's it, the munafiq. When do you really see who's a munafiq, yeah? When your back's against the wall,
right?
And you have to go out and you have to maybe lay down your life or whatever, I don't know what it is, you'll see the munafiq. Then you'll really see who's the munafiq, right? Like in the time of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Yeah.
Right. And this is, bro, this is the whole thing. Like, since 9/11, bro, what for me, 9/11, right, is really been a seismic shift. Like they said, nothing will be the same since 9/11. But it's really true in a way that I think a lot of people don't think about, in the sense that the West literally flushed all its values down the toilet. All its values of freedom, democracy, rule of law. All of those type of things, they just flushed it down the toilet. The first sign of danger, the coronavirus was the next thing. Yeah. The first sign of a little bit of danger, what did they do? Flush everyone's civil liberties down the toilet. Yeah. Right. Austria, vaccine mandates, Australia, putting people in concentration camps because they were not getting vaccinated or whatever. Right. It's unbelievable. Yeah. This is the West. What happened?
Predicated on fear. Predicated on fear.
Or predicated on fear. And a lot of it just lies as well, not your half-truths anyway, really just the truth, hyperbole. But the point is, that's what tests your... Bro, I like it. It's a bit like this, right? Our our flag is the flag of Tawheed. Yeah. Our standard is the standard of Tawheed. Yeah.
Right.
Imagine when things get really bad and what do we end up doing? We get out some idols and start worshipping idols. Can you imagine, bro? It's like you, that's how quickly you flush your principles down the toilet. Yeah. It's like that, bro. Because they weren't real principles in the first place. It was what we said. It was all convenience. Human rights is only human rights when you want them to be human rights.
Right.
When it's suitable for your, you know, foreign policy, when it's you, that's it's right. suitable for, you know, you maintaining the status quo. But when you want to violate human rights, you'll do it. You'll open torture camps in Nicaragua and South America. You'll render people. You still got Guantanamo Bay running. Yeah. Open. Where's all your flipping human rights? Because you don't believe in them.
No,
except when you want to.
Exactly. Exactly. And Abdurrahim, as we're drawing to a close, it's the stark reality, we already know this from our deen. Yes, it's Allah says in the Quran, hatred, rank hatred has already come out of their mouths, but what their hearts contain is even worse.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I saw that old woman. I think that's when I posted it and I said, and what is in her heart is even worse. That's the little caption I put when I posted that video on my Instagram. What her heart contains is even worse. May Allah protect us. May Allah change their hearts and guide them to Islam. That's what we really want, inshallah. That will be the best thing for everybody.
What do we want from this? We're not advocating hatred. Resentment.
Not at all, bro. We want goodness for everybody, man.
Yeah.
We just want people to be guided and to find happiness and peace in their life.
To be aware. And in these times now, we could be so caught up with the news, with everything that's going on. What we need to do is go back and read and look at what Allah has shown us. And Allah tells us the sunnah of Allah, as you said previously, Abdurrahim, never changes.
Never changes, and
every one of us and everything that's going on is within the decree and greater plan and design of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We cannot see that because we are finite and Allah is infinite, but this is all within the plans of Allah. But we've got to ask ourselves, what are we doing as Muslims, as believers? Are we still being an example? Or are we just picking up tropes and mantras and yes, bang out about Palestine. We have to. The statement is there. Bang out about the injustice that is taking place with the Muslims and the double standards. But also, we've got to stand, as you said, Abdurrahim, we've got to stand up and we've got to articulate against injustice. Now, what's happening to the Ukrainians is unjust, but we don't diminish it because we see the double standards with what's happening with Muslims, with brown people, with black people. We still have to do that. We don't jump into bed with the narrative that the West are just churning out the propaganda against Russia, and we don't jump into bed with the propaganda that's coming from Russia. We step back and we say, what does my deen say about this? And also remember that if we don't know, let's not just be given opinions. Let's remain silent on this. We're not just throwing opinions and I think this and believing everything that we're hearing, because then we can add to the problem and we're not leading with dignity. We're not leading with grace. We're not leading as Muslims with regards to what we say and conversely what we don't say.
Yeah. Bro, I think it's a great place to leave it. It's been another stimulating, amazing discussion as usual. Alhamdulillah. I think even the audience got all fired up. Alhamdulillah as well. Beginning to like it, especially at the end there. Bro, I'm so glad we got back together after this big break. I'm looking forward to our next one, inshallah. I don't know what we'll be talking about next time. I still think we should pick up where we left off on the Omicron. What was it?
not Omicron.
The alpha male, the beta male, and what was it?
There was the third one, wasn't there? Yes. We will pick up on that.
We had that discussion.
Yeah, and I think we will look
I'd at love that to have a discussion that. Is it really bad to be beta? You know, like, what does that mean?
No,
like,
it isn't.
Everyone can be an alpha, bro. Like, that's right. Too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
Yeah, very true. But I think we will pick back up on that subject. And then we need to look and ask, are there equivalents for females? I believe they are.
Yeah, gamma. No, it's not. Was it not gamma, bro? What was it?
Oh, what's, you know what? I can't, I've, you know, you've,
where, where's Hatton when you need him? Maybe our listeners could give us some suggestions about what they would like us to talk about. Wouldn't that be great? You know, so guys, if you got any subjects that you'd like us to cover, any discussions that you'd like us to have, why don't you let us know? Inshallah, we can open the doors and me and Abdul Haq can have a good banter about
Sigma.
It.
Thank you, Shamir. Sigma male.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, all right, bro. Right. It's been a pleasure, bro.
Likewise. And I will see you next week. We'll see if our participants send their messages.
Next week might be Ramadan, isn't it? Is it? No, that's not next week. It's the week after.
Yeah.
I'm getting too carried away.
No, we need Ramadan to come around, inshallah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this
one, inshallah. So until next week, Brother Abdulrahim, and to our audience, our participants, we look forward to seeing you next week. We are back. A piece of cake is back, inshallah. And yes, yeah. Naeem, a piece of cake can come along as well.
A piece of cake.
Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.